I've never seen that one.
Y'all ready? Good afternoon. Let me call to order the Monday, June 5th Transportation Committee of Mount Pleasant Town Council to order. It's good to see everybody there today on this nice, I guess meteorologically it's spring, but it's a summer day. After high school graduation is summer, right? It's good to see everybody here and I hope you survive the high tides this weekend. Item number two is approval of our minutes from the May 1st meeting. Do I have a motion, please?
Move for approval.
All right, any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All right, the minutes are approved. Item three is public comments. If you have a public comment, please come forward, give your name and address, and there is a 2.5 minute limit. You will hear the, I guess, Mr. Demora, are you the time? Okay.
I hear you, sir.
All right.
Hello, it's good to see you all. I'm Katie Zimmerman, Executive Director of Charleston Moves. We're located at 478 King Street, Charleston, South Carolina. I'm here today to ask for you all to formally let DOT know that, and I'm hoping that you agree with this position, that the existing configuration on the Isle of Palms connector is the best option, the best feasible option. There's a few things in particular that I just want to point out to you all, and I said very similar things last time I was in front of you all, but the alternatives that DOT has put forward, all of them would cut the space for people on bikes and on foot substantially. It would be a 10-foot multi-use path on one side with no hard barrier. So you've got folks who are moving bidirectionally in a smaller space without a barrier than what's currently in Wonders Way on the Ravenel Bridge. Also, all of the alternatives would require Mount Pleasant to remove an existing multi-use path that you all invested in and constructed and is heavily used. Nothing has changed from now to before the current restriping as far as where motorists could legally be. Motorists did not lose space to get to the current configuration that is in place. Lastly, Isle of Palms collected public comment on the current restriping before it happened. So it didn't come out of nowhere. They had a public hearing. The vast majority of public comment that was submitted was in support of what ended up being striped out there now. The other thing, just quickly, looking at Councilmember Ritchie, I was reminded, both sides of the bridge, law enforcement and emergency services, have repeatedly stated they are not seeing issues with the current restriping, and they can handle whatever is put forward, but they are not seeing current issues, and they are seeing a benefit from the reduced speed that came with the current restriping. So thank you so much for letting me go on and on about that. And one other thing, I just want to say I'm very proud to have been included in the safety action plan discussions, and I'm really proud of the town for being a leader as a municipality on working on that. Y'all are the only ones in Charleston County who are developing your own safety action plan, and I'm just really proud of that and appreciative. So thank you.
Thank you. Next, please.
Hi, Bob Marcello, a resident of Seaside Farms. I wanted to particularly comment about the notion of putting in a third lane on the connector. As an engineer, let me offer an engineering analogy. Take your garden hose at home, cut a section out of the middle of it, put in a slightly fatter section, but leave the rest of the hose alone, leave the nozzle at the end alone. Think you're going to get more water? Let me tell you ahead of time. Immeasurably small. Essentially no change. And the reason for that is that the rate determining step on the connector are the lights at rifle range, Hungry Neck, 17. If they don't change, the flow through that area will be unchanged for the third lane. The third lane will fill up within minutes, and then those rate determiners are going to be what owns the show. So that makes no sense. And for emergency vehicles, the only thing that matters is how wide is the connector, how many cars are on the connector that have to get out of the way when an emergency vehicle shows up. If you add a third lane, you're now taking the total number of cars, particularly if they're stop and go bumper to bumper,
you're adding 50% more cars that are now struggling with each other, trying to figure out how are we getting out of the way. You know, whereas with two lanes and the bike lane, pedestrian lane, plenty of room for people to get over. Now you add a third lane, 50% more cars have to try to get out of the way, and I can guarantee at the minimum that will slow down emergency vehicles. So to me, the third lane makes zero sense if it were free, makes less sense if somebody's going to pay to do that. So thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Next, please.
Hello. Hi, everybody. Richard Rissick, 945 Penn Hollow. My office is also here. I'm a frequent cyclist on the bridge, person on the bike. I just want to reiterate what has already been said in a couple of points and add something different. First of all, IOP studied this. I testified at it, brought it forth. As an engineering solution, this is a total fail because from a public safety standpoint, all it does is it puts people, any change puts people in closer contact with cars. And that makes it unbelievably more dangerous. The last point is this, is any kind of issues about access on and off the island that were, as were factually addressed by an engineer, you don't build a church for Easter Sunday. I'll let you stand on the Isle of Plums connector and you can tell me how many times it's backed up bumper to bumper. We all know when it is. You can ask everybody who lives here what it is. It is Saturday at 4 o'clock and that's about it. So this idea that there's some sort of great hazard posed by traffic on the bridge and to deny people the one place of beauty that they can ride and walk makes no sense whatsoever. Last, God forbid there's a hurricane and we need to evacuate off the island. Two things are true. One is, I'm pretty sure there won't be pedestrians and bicyclists during the middle of the hurricane who want to get off the island, and it's pretty easy to reverse all those lanes and let people go off Sullivan's Island. So that's just a fallacy. As somebody who rides and lives here and is cheering on as we try to get more accessibility to bike lanes, keep what is working and has already been studied. There's no need to change any of it. Thank you.
Next, please.
Hello, I'm Sarah Hayes. I live at 1 Duaney Road here in Mount Pleasant. And I'm also in favor of keeping the lanes on the connector as they are. I'm a runner and cyclist. I was nearly hit by a car before these lanes were put in place for pedestrians and cyclists when it was just that same color, really scary section that people would run and bike on sort of that well. And it just makes so much sense to leave them as they're marked. Cyclists are safer, runners are safer, cars are safer because they know exactly where they can be. And obviously in the case of emergency, space could be made for emergency vehicles. So just lending my support and grateful for the town and any effort to make lanes and cycling and walking safer here in town. Thanks.
Thank you. Next, please.
Scott Schmitz, 1193 Sharpstown Court. I'm not going to say anything you haven't heard already. As someone who has walked, jogged, biked, and driven across the IOP connector, I would like to ask you to keep the current configuration. Since I was young, a safety rule of thumb I've been taught for the rules on the road are to ride with traffic and walk against traffic with current configuration as possible on the bridge. And you may say, well, with all the dedicated lanes, it's not so important on the bridge, but it's critical once you get over the bridge to Isle of Palms, because now you're just dumped onto the active street with no bike path or other way to avoid being in close proximity with cars. Secondly, the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration recommendations for pedestrian safety say to separate pedestrians as far as possible from the active vehicle roadway. With the current configuration, you have the buffer of the white chevron lanes, the bike lane, and then the pedestrian lanes on the outside. With all the configurations I saw, proposals I've seen, that buffer is going to be decreased significantly. And then last, I'm not a traffic engineer, but as a citizen, I don't understand the rationale behind destroying existing infrastructure that's useful to town residents and our visitors 365 days a year in order to expedite traffic for a limited number of hours for a limited number of days in the year. Thank you.
Next, please.
Good afternoon. Mike Tinkey, 208 Benning. First, I'd like to thank you all for your hard work and the staff on the noise ordinance. It's working. Thank you. Second, I'd like to support each of the speakers that came up before and encourage you to have more, not less, bike and access. I saw a number of my friends who bike every day, and they have to drive to Francis Mary into different places because they don't think it's safe enough to really bike a lot without having to drive someplace, get their bike out and go. We should be able to bike virtually everywhere. And so thank you for your support that you've given so far to expanding biking, and let's do some more. And in the spirit of thankfulness, I'd like to thank you all for buying 516 Coleman Boulevard. I think that's a wonderful thing. It makes good common sense. It keeps the trees, it keeps the green space, it keeps the beauty of the boulevard that y'all have been working on to add trees to and the rest. And so I look forward to that, and also look forward to the multi-development and how that goes about and how that can also add to the quality of life on Coleman. But again, the most important one here today on the connector, let's keep that, but let's add to it and keep going. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Next, please. Anyone else?
Public comment. Last call. If you want to speak. All right. We will close the public comments. We'll move to item number four, which is South Carolina Department of Transportation presentation on the Isle of Palms Connector Study.
Hello there.
Hey, Mayor.
Good to see you again.
Members of the council, I always look forward to coming down to God's country and seeing everybody. My son was born in Mount Pleasant, so I'm always happy to come back down here. But I appreciate your time. I know you have a full schedule today. I also appreciate your staff's time and always communicate and coordinate with us because we want to get things right for not just the state, for the cities, the counties, the towns, all of us, because it's all our state. So we did do a survey. I think I provided that to your staff, and it was run through MetroQuest, which is what we use for online surveys. You can use your phone to take the survey. We've done that on larger projects like 526 or Carolina Crossroads, better known as Malfunction Junction in Columbia. And we thought this would be a good way to go ahead and get that public input. The survey ran for 30 days, and it was from January through February of last year. And I was just going to touch on some of the highlights. This is kind of what the survey looked like, and this is the report that it produced that I'm going to speak about very briefly today. And it really asked us several questions of the survey, those that took the survey and had the existing configuration, which some of the speakers in the public comment period spoke about, what's out there, what we put in place back in April of 2021, and then it had five concepts. So this was the existing condition, what's out there today. It has the buffered area between the motoring public, and then it has the bike lanes, and then the area for the pedestrians. It received 49% favorable, and that would be the five stars and the four stars. And stop me whenever, if you have any questions, please. And then really the impetus that started this was a concern for incident response to and from the island, as well as incidents on the bridge. And so we tried to find a way to add a usable shoulder, because prior to April of 2021, there was that median that was a 10 or 11 foot wide that incident response and first responders and law enforcement used whenever trying to get to an incident, either on the bridge or on the island. And so what was interesting is concepts one through four were different ways of adding back a usable shoulder. And none of them really ranked very highly of the people that took the survey. You know, concept one, it got 12% for five stars and four stars. And that had the 10-foot shoulder on the north end of the bridge. Concept two just flipped it to the south side of the bridge at 10%, four and five stars. And all these put your pedestrian bicyclist on one side or the other, and it separates them similarly to how we do it with the Ravenel, but the Ravenel has the concrete barrier. This just has the painted buffer. Concept 3 did a little bit better, and that was initially what I believe law enforcement and the fire chief were supportive of when we first presented the concepts, but still only at 27% 4 and 5 star. And then concept 4, same thing, 24%. And then we got the concept 5, which actually added one lane of capacity going off the island, and it got 50% of 4 and 5 stars. So it's pretty even split between keep it as it is or go with additional capacity going off the island. Some key takeaways, we had almost 4,000 people take the survey, which is really good. When we do a public meeting, I don't know about the town of Mount Pleasant, but if we get 50 to 100 people that show up to a public meeting, we're really excited. So to have it in the thousands was very encouraging. We did go through and strip out the duplicate IP addresses because there was a concern that some folks might just continuously take the survey and might skew the results. So we took those out, our consultant that handled this. Improved safety for all users led in the summary of identified concerns. Another thing that was strange, again, I spoke about the reason why we did this was access, concern about lack of access for emergency response, instant response. And what was really interesting is that that rate is second to last, which was just strange to me. Improved safety mobility ranked the highest at 36%. 86% ranked traffic safety, average to great. And then, obviously, congestion at the intersection on the Isle of Palms ranked as average to poor at 87%. I think I already touched on the alternatives comparison. And then the summary paragraph pointed out to either retain existing or continue on with concept 5. These are the tables I already touched on. It just again, the lower score means it did better on this table. And improved safety for all had the highest score or the best score. The improved safety for all users, again, had 62% that ranked 1 or 2. And then, again, the improved emergency vehicle access was second to last, really tied with improved pedestrian and bicycle access at 44% of ranked 1 or number 2. Improved safety mobility, ranked 1 on figure 2. And then the traffic safety ranked the highest on this table. So our next steps, we presented this to the City of Isle of Palms back in April, and they asked us to move forward with continuing to study option 5. They passed a resolution specifically requesting it. We certainly welcome the town of Mount Pleasant's comments. Our plan is to negotiate a further study, because now that the survey is over, our plan is to have one of our engineering consultants do a full-blown study of it, because the survey really doesn't tell you how to handle traffic at the intersections. I think one of your speakers spoke to. So what we would do is we would survey the entire thing, and when I say the entire thing, from Mount Pleasant all the way onto the Isle of Palms, we would take counts at all the intersections. We'd quantify the impacts if we would need to purchase right-of-way, if we would need to relocate utilities. And we'd also come back with how we would handle the transitions for the bike lanes. And we'd come back to the city and the town at that time and just share it with you and see what works, what doesn't work, because it impacts us, the city, and the town of Mount Pleasant. So that's not going to be a quick process. That could take months to a year. So I could see once we get a consultant underway, it'll probably be sometime maybe next spring to a year from now, we'd be able to come back and say, well, this is how we would lay it out, and this is what the impacts would be in next steps. And we'd probably have some type of public input through a public information meeting. So everybody that signed up to speak, we would encourage them and anybody else that has interest in this to participate in a public meeting and give us their input once we actually had a real design to show. So with that, I'm going to stop talking.
All right. Thank you. And before we move to that, I want to say at this committee, I want to thank South Carolina DOT for working with people in Mount Pleasant on 526. I know that's not on the agenda today, but we got outcomes that the neighbors like, that this committee likes, that the town likes. And I don't think we needed proof that y'all were great people to work with, but now the public saw that. So I want to just thank y'all for that now that I have the opportunity. Thank you. Now let's move on to the Isle of Palms connector. One question I would ask, and I guess for legal
and for Mr. Morrison, do you need a vote of either this committee or this council? Because I know that the Isle of Palms did vote, right?
They did, but no, we don't need a vote from you. I mean, I don't even know what I'm asking you to vote on, really. Okay. Right? I mean, I can't tell you if we're going to be purchasing property, if we're going to be changing your intersection that y'all, it's all our signal that y'all managed through a signal maintenance agreement. So,
okay,
I would feel that would be.
We wondered if you need one from us so you know where both municipalities stand, we would do that.
It's up to y'all. If you want to, you certainly can, but I'm not here asking for anything.
Okay. Is that? Sound okay, Mr. Peckley?
Correct, sir. Unless there is town right-of-way property involved in the town,
though, okay. Likely not be this. Okay, I appreciate it. I'll preface this before we open up to the committee, just to jump in there and kind of throw this out there. There are two huge issues in this for me. One is things that we just mentioned. When you look at what we were doing infrastructure-wise around our town, our citizens are putting up with a lot of changed infrastructure. We're redoing Coleman Boulevard at Patriots Point. We're doing the Officer Vaughn Key connector. We're going to be doing All America Boulevard. The county is going to be doing Highway 41. DOT is working to do 526. We're doing right there at Hopcaw Creek coming out on Long Point Road. So, and when we did those, we were fixing problems, and they were problems that originated with our citizens, and they looked to us for an answer. And Councilman Ritchie, I know a good line when I steal one. If I may steal your line, I don't think we need to be doing solutions in search of a problem. And the other thing that bothers me the most about this is removing multi-use paths that serve our neighborhoods on both sides of the connector and to be, you know, that we have already done, already put in, and then to just pull that up. I don't think we've done that in my tenure as a council member or mayor, and those are two pretty insurmountable things for me. Yes, sir.
So is there any way to put up Concept 5 again, that picture? You have that one?
Absolutely.
I just want to look at it again.
No, I know. I went kind of fast. I apologize.
No, no worries. That's fine.
Yes, sir.
Okay. But what I see, again, just because we're human beings, that little bit of area that's, if I'm looking at it to the right, and, you know, not where the pedestrian lane is, we got the two lanes. Somebody's going to get in that lane and ride a bike and walk. They're going to do it. It's inevitable.
Mm.
Where currently what we have, what I like, is of the existing configuration, because you do have safety lanes for both bikes and pedestrians on the other side. So I say that, and again, I understand we may not be taking a vote, but I just want to offer my opinion. And then from the public safety response, it just hasn't held anything for me, but I keep hearing that. Being law enforcement professional, as long as I was, speaking to my counterparts, and I believe there was a pretty significant incident not too long ago in Isle of Palms that prompted a tri-county response of 30-plus, I'm probably short of the number of emergency vehicles that made it across the Isle of Palms schedule with no trouble whatsoever. I understand there was an accident, but they can happen anytime, anywhere. What's there now, vehicles can get there. We can get first responders on both sides. And when there are wrecks, that's what's nice about our motor units. I'm putting a plug in for PD's motor unit. It's cheap. You want more, let me know. We have ways to get there. So that's just my opinion. Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
I just want to stress, I totally agree with you, Mayor, and Chief. And, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. It's a few things right now that are working, so.
Thank you. Mr. Chapman?
First of all, I think we're premature. We're premature because there are other alternatives. And I say other alternatives that can help in both situations, whether it's safety, whether it's bicycles, whether it's pedestrians, and whether it's access in and out. So I think we're really premature making any comments until we have an opportunity to study it among ourselves. Yeah, that's my only comment. And especially since we're not taking a vote.
I guess my question would be, you know, before y'all spend a year's worth of work, I don't think you're hearing any compelling
urging from this committee for y'all to go out there and find ways to change this. I mean, we're not going to stand in your way, but yeah, if we wanted to endorse one of those changes, you would have heard it. We would have had a motion, and we would have encouraged you to go do the work you need to do. And I don't hear that from this committee. We don't speak for the whole council, but that's one reason this committee is for, because it only takes one more to be a majority of council. And I feel certain that there is not a majority of council that is just dying to change the IOP connector. Have I misspoken? Do you need anything else?
No, I just want to thank you for your time, and I'll continue to coordinate with your staff as we move forward, and we'll just see where this thing lands.
Thank you very much.
All right. Take care.
Appreciate it. Yeah. All right, let's move to item 5, presentation of Town of Mount Pleasant Safety Action Plan. Who's going to take the lead on that?
I will, sir. Right, Mr. Mayor, members of the committee, we're bringing forward to you today, and you should have received it this past week, a final draft of the Town Safety Action Plan. This is sort of the brainchild to go and investigate existing issues within the town through looking at crash history, looking at other geometric features of roadways that lend themselves to being unsafe, lack of infrastructure, etc. And so our staff, along with our consultants, have worked over the past 6 months or more to really go through a process to fully vet the town from all mobility standpoint, walking, biking, vehicle safety, and we've come to the point where we have a safety action plan that is in front of you for consideration to full council. You can see some of the activities that we've done up to this point, the classic public engagement. We did develop stakeholder groups with about 24 different agencies in the area and nonprofits. We've come up to this point with those recommendations, which really is a list of over 70 intersection and roadway segments. These have, of course, been broken out into different tiers based off of, you know, the priority of existing crash history mainly, but with other factors as well. You've worked and successfully passed a resolution for Target Zero, and the safety action plan has been developed. You can see we did, you know, over the past 5 years, there's been 10,000 crashes or more, 15 fatalities. We've added, unfortunately, another one to that list this past weekend, 81 incapacitating and 749 incapacitating issues. And that is, again, what that Target Zero resolution hopes to reduce and eliminate. And so what we have in front of you, for consideration, is requesting a recommendation to council to adopt the safety action plan. This safety action plan is a critical piece for our staff to be able to pursue a subsequent federal grant, the Safe Streets and Roadways for All grant, in this next month for those top 17 projects. Again, those projects range from intersection improvements, roadway segment improvements, bike and pedestrian improvements, all, you know, incorporated into the full report that you've seen. And this is what that total number is for a 5-year grant commitment of $15,680,000. So that is what is in front of you today for consideration. Happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Committee members? My question would be, who does this grant come through?
That's a great question. This grant is unique. It is part of the most recent infrastructure grant bill. It is only eligible, it comes from USDOT, but is only eligible for municipalities, cities, tribal lands. It does not, ICDOT is not available to pursue these funds. They do not necessarily manage that process. We're an LPA department here and can manage that. And I think it gives us a leg up from a competitive standpoint to pursue this grant as opposed to some of the other ones that are on the table.
And is this something that our federal delegation can help us with?
Absolutely. We've sought letters of support from all of, thank you for your help with that and the development of the letter there to send to all of our council, or senators and council members at state and at federal level. Okay.
So
yes.
What motion we recommend to council?
Yes.
So I'll make a motion that we recommend to council.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Is there any other discussion? I want to
Thank you all for this. Katie, I want to thank you for pointing out. I didn't realize other places weren't doing this. So it's wonderful. We try to lead the way in Mount Pleasant, and sometimes we accomplish that, which is great. Any other comments? All in favor of the motion to approve to council, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Thank you very much. Item number six, this is something that we started back at the first of the year. Initial mobility action plan study finding. This is our traffic study. This is what we were getting on to find out where our choke points are and what we can do about it. This is not about new roads and new right-of-ways mostly. It's about managing the infrastructure that we already have. And StanTech has been doing this for us. I see Rick Day back there. How you doing? Good to see you. Are you coming up?
No, sir.
All right.
18
up before. All right. Sounds good.
Mayor, can I say something?
Yes, you may.
So when I got scheduled for that meeting to go over that presentation, I literally was like, oh, God, this is going to be the most boring 2 hours I spent my entire life. It was the best meeting. I had so much fun. So anyway, thank you so much.
Well, I'll think we can have fun again today.
Well, it's fascinating when we say this all the time as elected officials. The one thing we hear the most about is traffic. And this weekend, it was, I know we had a very unfortunate fatality and there were some other wrecks, but I mean, this weekend, it was pretty hard. And so anything we can do to help mobility and the less time we sit in traffic, the better our quality of life. And this study, I felt the same way. It was fascinating. So if you'll kind of walk us through that.
Sure.
I don't know that we had 2 hours.
We don't need to take that long. I hope I'm not up here for 2 hours. I'll try to take about 10 minutes, and so I'll go through some of this pretty quick. There's a lot of information, but happy to come back and answer any questions as we go. But my name is Josh Mitchell. I work for StanTech. I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak with you about this study. We appreciate the opportunity to work on this study with the town. So just to kind of lay some groundwork, this study had two kind of main goals. One was to identify the congestion and safety issues in the town, and then overlay that on all the work that the town is already doing. It has been done, is already doing, and there's a lot of it, and we'll get into that. But with the comprehensive plan, with the long-range transportation plan, with the safety action plan that we just discussed, a lot of work. So overlay those two things together, and then end up leading to what are some potential gaps or opportunities for additional improvements, and how can we prioritize those next steps. So a lot of this is review, but there is some additional information in that pamphlet that you've got. And the agenda and the information in this presentation will largely mirror that. So feel free to please go along in that pamphlet as we go. It'll be the same thing on the screen, just in case it's hard to see. So just to dive right in, and we want to set the stage with what are the existing traffic patterns, what are the existing traffic volumes. And there's a lot of information kind of on this slide to look at, and this is the first kind of page when you open up the pamphlet. But one of the things that stood out to us as we studied this was really the traffic along 17 and Johnny Dodds and comparing that to the interstate. And what you see there is that the daily traffic volumes on 17 are comparable to interstate volumes. We went a step further and looked statewide, higher than 72% of the interstate miles in South Carolina. So extraordinary volumes on a signalized arterial through the town. But going even further, looking at the speeds, we see through a signalized arterial still with all the delay at every signal, you're still averaging traffic volumes in the congested times of day in the rush hours of about 30 to 35 miles per hour, which is really efficient use of the existing infrastructure. It's well-maintained signals. It's adaptive signal control. It's a system that's operating very well despite extraordinary traffic volumes, especially when you compare it to the interstate. And those traffic, those average speeds come from cell phone probe data that we can look at tons and tons, thousands of data points to get better data than just driving through the corridor a couple times. This is over the course of an entire year. And using that same data, kind of going to the next page, we looked at traffic patterns. So not just the volumes, but where are people going to and where are they coming from. And so again, a lot of information here. I'll try to hit the high points, but they're looking at coming in and out of the town, about 40% coming over the bridge, 30% 526, and then the rest split between those other gateways to the islands, and then north of North Mount Pleasant, and then 41. And again, kind of keeping with the theme of looking at 17 and Johnny Dodds, that bottom half of the page kind of goes into some of those patterns. And one of the big takeaways is that
Coming over the bridge, of all the traffic that comes into the town on a regular daily basis over the bridge, about 15% of it drops off at Houston Northcutt, either drops off or gets on. And we consider the large 90,000 vehicles per day over the bridge. That is a large volume through a signalized intersection that's taking left turns, right turns. And those turning movements, conflicting with through movements, that's really what can contribute to congestion. So that's a big takeaway. Another big takeaway here on this slide is of the traffic coming into the town on 526, about a third drops off at Long Point. So no shock there, but it just kind of corroborates what we know, why some of these issues pop up in terms of congestion, because that's where people want to go and that's where they're coming from. So again, I can come back to this, a lot of information, but those are some of the main takeaways. Kind of continuing on, I don't need to spend too much time on this since we just talked about the safety action plan, but again, one of the goals of this document and kind of the vision would be that this could be a public interfacing document, perhaps, and something to help communicate what the town is doing. And this is the safety action plan, and these are some of the findings from the safety action plan. And again, a lot of info, but one of the main takeaways is that 17, a lot of your high crash locations, segment-wise, intersection-wise, are along 17. Corresponding with those higher traffic volumes. But some other key takeaways is, again, we talked about that Houston Northcutt intersection. That is the number one ranking intersection in terms of crash history. The intersection of Chuck Dolly and Coleman is the number four. And then there's an area with vehicular and ped bike crash history on Long Point near Bell Hall and Egypt that kind of pops out as well. But I'll kind of move through this since we have an update already, but I'm happy to come back. So that's kind of the safety side of things. Here's some of the vehicular congestion side of things. And it may not show up very clear on screen. Hopefully on the pamphlet's a little bit better. But this is kind of when you open up your Google Maps, you see red, you know that there's slowdowns. You see green, you know that you're likely to be able to travel at the speed that you want to. And that's the same kind of map here. And I'll get into a little bit more behind the scenes of how we developed this color coding system in a minute. But using this, we identified 10 major congestion contributors, mostly intersections, but some interchanges as well, which really, as we looked at the Google data and the traffic data, these were the locations where traffic began to build during a typical rush hour, whether it was the morning rush or the evening rush. So I can go to the next slide here. This should begin, and what you'll see playing here is kind of a simulation or a video of that Google traffic. And this is just one snapshot of the day, so there's much more that we looked at. But I want to give a little bit of an example of how we identify these congestion patterns. And on the top right, you'll see the time moving at 5-minute intervals. And this just is showing you how traffic builds, where it starts. And if I draw your attention kind of where that Houston Northcutt is, you see that intersection in either direction where that traffic is starting to build up. And you see the red increasingly get worse and worse throughout this morning peak, which we typically consider to end at around 9:30. And you see that case here. And we've got these for multiple days and for all day. I'm just showing the morning here just to kind of give an example of how we disturb this data. But happy to come back. I've got the videos in this presentation if you wanted to watch more. I'm a traffic engineer, so I could watch this all day, but I understand not everybody feels that way, so I can move on and come back if we'd like to. So, but this is kind of how we developed that graphic that I just showed with the color coding system of congestion.
I know some of us were thinking old school when we started this that we were going to see the little black pipe across the road and yeah, all the cars going over it. Then the cell phone data is fascinating.
It is, and it really allows us to get more of an average sample size. You know, those old school way, if there's a collision or something, it could mess up your old data set. But this way, we can siphon that out and get good data. So it's amazing technology today. Okay, so we're interested in vehicular congestion and traffic, but we're also interested in multimodal mobility as well. And part of the goal of this document is to highlight not just vehicular, but multimodal as well. And so this is the Mount Pleasant Way. This isn't necessarily new information. It's really just presented in a way that fits with the rest of the vocabulary of that document that's in front of you. But the teal being the off-road separated paths, and then the navy and then the yellow being secondary quiet streets that hopefully lead you to those shared use paths to give you another option besides a vehicle or an automobile. And so this is really a comprehensive plan that would address the entire town. And so this is really an important piece of mobility to include. And this is something the town's already doing, not necessarily new information, but it really does go into the entire mobility action plan as a whole. So moving on to some short-term projects, we're going to get to the big items, and that's kind of where the ultimate end of this particular project is going, to identify some of those big capital improvement projects. But there are numerous short-term intersection improvement projects as well. Turn lanes, traffic circles, signal improvements, pedestrian improvements. And as this kind of map shows, they're really all over the town. And you don't want these smaller, quote-unquote smaller improvements to get lost in the weeds, because they really do end up helping mobility and safety to a large degree. Especially all of these added together will have a large impact on mobility in the town. But speaking of those bigger, longer-term projects, based on the town's comprehensive plan, there are a number of large and long-term improvement projects planned and committed and funded in some form. And what's shown on the right there is that same list of those congestion hotspots that we talked about before. And what this overlay really revealed is that many of those congestion hotspots are being addressed by one project or another that's already committed, planned, and funded in some way. And so this is really a positive of what the town is already doing to address congestion and safety concerns. But there are a couple that don't necessarily have a committed or funded project associated with them just yet. And that leads kind of to our crescendo here, which is identifying those next projects that the town could consider for some improvement projects. And that number one, it hopefully it's not a surprise as we go through this, it came up in safety, it came up in the traffic volumes and patterns, it came up in congestion, but that intersection that Johnny Dodds and Houston Northcutt is a significant contributor to congestion, as I'm sure we're all aware. And so there are different alternatives that could be implemented to address some of those concerns. And that's kind of our next step. This is somewhat of an interim update. And our next step is going to be to look at some of these solutions in more detail. But really, it's all about handling the left turns. You know, do you do some alternative left turns, take them away and make them throughs instead of lefts, which can improve your signal operations? There's some continuous flow intersection, which realigns the left turns in a kind of an alternative way, and then there's grade separation, which takes them away from the through movements altogether. Varying levels of impact, both from how they would improve traffic, but also right-of-way impacts and financial investment. So our next step is to do some more detailed analysis and come up with, you know, what's the bang for your buck, so to speak. But also the intersection of Coleman and Chuck Dolly. The roundabout, I'm sure, is familiar to everyone, and it may or may not be appropriate at this intersection, but we want to highlight it as a potential option that we will move forward and consider in a little bit more detail, not necessarily reinvent the wheel, but look at that again as we move on to the next step. And then that area on Long Point that was really highlighted as a safety concern, looking at that as well for access, potential access management and pedestrian bicycle facility improvements. Really, that's more of a safety geared focus. So not necessarily, there are congestion concerns there, but that one was really highlighted based on the safety action plan findings. So those are some of the priority improvement projects that have kind of surfaced through this study and that we'll look at in more detail as we move forward. But I want to close with some traffic and incident management opportunities. And this is really about managing traffic using your existing infrastructure and adding some efficiencies there. And there's a lot of stats on here, but the one that really stands out to me is that for every minute that a lane is blocked, it takes 4 additional minutes to remove that delay even after you take away the obstacle. And so the quicker we can safely manage these incidents and move traffic, it's really an exponential benefit that we might see. So the town's already got adaptive signal controls. Of course, there's EMS. There are some opportunities for active traffic management, which would be, you know, potentially leveraging existing technology that the town has. It's very technologically advanced, and using that to provide real-time updates, whether it's a queue or congestion that's extended beyond what's normal, quote-unquote normal, can send an alert, potentially there's an incident, signal malfunction, something like that could be addressed. So this is kind of the not maybe quote unquote a big ticket item, but it could have significant improvement on the town's mobility. So that's kind of my last slide, and happy to go back over anything or answer any questions, but that's kind of where we're at.
And let me ask Mr. Chapman, as the resident engineer in this, I remember when we got to this point in our presentation, this is one of the first things we can do. This traffic incident management emergency response, because all the right of way, all the roads, all the redone intersections in the world don't work if crashes are clogging up traffic. And you have some experience with this. If you'd like to expound on that a little bit, please.
Well, I'm not going to take too long. All I'm going to say is this is one of the principal issues that cities across the United States are looking at, some in more detail, others in less detail, but every large city in the United States is looking at this. We have the opportunity to be a leader in the Charleston metropolitan area. The city of Charleston did something like this a while ago, but there's a sort of falling down somewhat because of personnel. We can be the leader, and I would love to see us start very soon trying to put together a traffic incident management program for the town of Mount Pleasant. It would be a way in which, as it's said on here, every minute a typical lane is blocked, either incident results in 4 minutes of travel delay time. That goes back to what's called traffic flow theory. And I'm not getting into any details on that. But that's what it gets into. So I would like to see us, as soon as possible, move forward with this. And, you know, we got to walk before we run. This is a good way to start.
Councilman Ritchie, I remember when you were police chief, on a smaller scale, y'all did something like this on the big festival days at Boone Hall about having tow trucks ready and ready to respond to the incidents there. So that was sort of a micro version of what this would be town-wide. So,
yes, sir, that's correct. We staged the assets we thought we may need.
Mm-hmm.
We actually used them to help clear traffic a lot quicker.
Mm-hmm. How does something like this work? And this is for any of y'all. Do you have a contract with a tow company? What do other municipalities do? Because we don't run tow trucks, unless I'm missing something.
I could tell you, we do have tow trucks, and she could spend if you want to, but we have tow trucks that are contracted with us in the town, the police department, that we use.
Right.
And those are the ones, because we already have a partnership with them, we could reach out to those folks to have them stage in those areas, mm-hmm. and they've already worked very well with us.
Mm-hmm. And if you go back to the early part of this report, this shows us where the most likely places are. We probably even know the most likely time of occurrence on most of those, don't we? I mean, surely there's a thing that tells us that these hours are your worst times for this intersection. And for, I don't know what y'all are seeing on y'all screens, I guess it's the same thing, but it's pretty interesting where these crash areas line up. And I'm looking at the one here, typical weekday rush hour congestion, the top congestion contributors. And I take it that it's not just the volume of traffic at those intersections, but it's also that those are more prone to accidents. Is that correct?
That
or am I assuming something there?
No, it does factor into that typical traffic. And actually, in the video, it's a little bit further on, but you can see an incident pop up and the congestion that follows.
So okay.
I'm sorry.
No, please.
No, I was just saying, man, if you remember, I spoke some meetings ago about how the town could also adopt the same type of program that the state has, the SHEP program,
mm-hmm.
where they have those vehicles primarily on our interstates that can respond with that vehicle that can push a minor accident out of the way, can bring fuel, can bring whatever it takes to get a motor mm-hmm. us back in or open our roadways. And that's certainly something that, as we discuss this more, to see about implementing here. We have CSOs that work with us, so we could hire more if needed, but if we could have our own response
right.
in different areas of town based on the data that we have, knowing where we'll need them. Because right now, if we call SHEP, unless it's on the bridge or on one of the major interstates, they're not going to come necessarily on 17 for us.
Right. Good points. What do we need to do at this point? I mean, I think we're all wildly happy about this. It gives us the data we want. It gives us the recommendations we want. I see the ones where you've got them listed, and you're right. As you list some of the possibilities there, like grade separation, money is a big issue, and we're fixing drainage and stuff like that. I think we're all looking for where can we do the smallest change for the biggest result and get started on those things first. And I think the incident management's probably, one of the best ones we could do. And Mr. DeMoor, if we start thinking from a staff and asset area, working in that area, not to the exclusion of these others, because you got just about every part of town represented on this committee by design. And we can all tell you our least favorite intersection in town. And they might vary. And so, I mean, none of these are exclusive to the other, but it's more likely that we could have incident response up and running before we have a major redesign and major redo of an intersection. Am I right, Ms. Norris?
Yes, sir. Okay. And that's exactly kind of where we're heading, is really this investigative effort was really identify the problems and let's start thinking about some of the solutions at different feasibility levels,
right,
for the solutions. But programmatic things like we're talking about here, certainly those will come at the top of the list as far as implementation, our ability to implement them, as opposed to a project that might take 5 or 6 years to implement.
Right.
So the next step is we're going to do some analysis now, like Josh is talking about, Houston Northcutt, Chuck Dolly, these locations, and say, what can we do here that's, you know, I don't think we're going to be talking about grade separation, we'll give you a grade separation and what the cost and the impacts would be, but we'd like to find something much less costly,
mm-hmm,
right? So that's the next step, do that analysis, bring it back to you for your reaction to that and some guidance. And we think we can probably do that in August, if not August, certainly September.
That'd be great. All right. Any other comments? I want to thank you all. This is above and beyond really what we were even hoping for when we first saw this out. And I want to thank staff for making this work and y'all for doing it. This gives us so much to work with. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. Thank you very much. That concludes item 6. Let's move to item 7, discussion and possible action regarding 516 Coleman site plan. If you don't have your Google Maps in your brain, 516 Coleman is the former Wells Fargo parking lot at the corner of Simmons and Coleman. And I parked in it last evening to go to the fundraiser for the Cobb family trip boat. So and walked to Shin Creek, and it's not bad. It's a 3-block walk, and I walked it 2 different ways, to one going and one coming back. But it works. But we all know parking in this area of town is the unsolved problem so far. And so we bought this unanimously by a vote of council, and appreciate y'all coming to talk to us about it today, what the possibilities are.
Thank you. Mayor, I'm going to introduce Matt Hines with Dennis Corporation, who is doing the feasibility study on what can that reimagined, rethought piece of 516 look like for the town, what needs it needs to meet, parking being one of them, and how it integrates into the surroundings that we have now. So Matt's going to do a brief presentation, then we can have some discussion.
Sounds good. Thank you, Brad. Thank you, members of the committee, Mr. Mayor. I appreciate the time, and I just want to go through some of the ideas that we've talked about at this point. As Brad said, my name is Matt Hines. I work for Dennis Corporation, and we have been taking a look at the 516 Coleman Boulevard property at some potential parking improvements that can take place there. As discussed previously, this was previously a bank parking lot, and wanted to take a look at the overall existing condition of the lot, determine some objectives for the town for the lot, and then look at some alternatives and hopefully develop a preferred alternative. Okay. All right, so as discussed, this is located on Coleman Boulevard between Simmons Street and Scott Street. Right there. This is kind of an aerial view of the lot. This area is kind of catty corner from Moultrie Middle School. There's shopping in the area right up the street from the Shin Creek boat ramp and diagonally across from the farmer's market. There are currently 3 entrances, including 2 that come from Coleman Boulevard, and a lot of mature trees, a couple of grass islands, multiple different configurations for the parking. And here's just another picture of from the ground of the site. So what we were looking at trying to do was to develop a project that would better meet the town's needs, take a look at a few alternatives based off of what those needs are, weigh the pros and cons of each, and basically come up with a kind of a preferred alternative that we feel meets the most objectives. The first item that we looked at was basically an expansion of the existing, which was very much heavy with parking. It does increase the available parking from 28 to 49 spaces, obviously with a lot of impact to the area, a lot of tree removal. Does not preserve or add any green space, and does not provide for the possibility of boat trailer parking. The second alternative is here, which provides a little bit more boat parking, but does have some impacts to the existing with tree removal and not quite as much green space. The third alternative we looked at, which is basically the pinnacle of parking, which is taking a look at a parking structure. It's the most parking per footprint. However, in this case, we're looking at a structure that would really only add, would take the parking available from to 70 spaces for a much larger cost within the kind of the design parameters for the town in this district.
So in effect, that's a parking deck you're talking about?
That's correct. That's correct. And based off of the height restrictions that would have to follow for that district, that would limit the overall height. And then the footprint itself is so small once you add in maneuverability, you're basically getting 70 spaces for a multi-million dollar project. So what we ended up doing was taking a closer look at kind of a combination of alternative one and two, which brings in the boat parking, but does try to maximize the parking within the space that's there and the traffic flow that could be considered. So that is what we're looking at right here. So this alternative gives us 35 spaces from the existing 28. Within that is included seven trailer spaces, two EV spaces, ADA accessible spaces, and whatnot. It actually increases the amount of green space from what is there now. Since you were there the other evening, you can realize that there's a lot of, it's nothing but island and trees and asphalt that's out there right now. This actually adds some to that while also increasing the number of parking spaces. One of the items that staff asked us to take a look at was how we could implement some of the lid parameters to this job in order to provide a for the town to be able to look at how can these be implemented for any development, whether it's public or private, and what we can look at on that. And there's a summary on there where basically right now we feel like we can take a look at adding well more than would be required for any lead requirements for the town, lid requirements for the town, and also provide some flexibility on the implementation of those. So we're estimating that right now, based off of this schematic, we're looking at a project that would be on the order of $425,000, something like that. These are just kind of some zoomed images, so you can see the boat parking spaces. These can be restricted to provide essentially standard vehicle spaces during certain times where you want to limit the boat travel.
It eliminates that big mature oak tree though, right?
Yes, and actually what we're doing is currently we're planning on relocating that tree if it is cost effective, and analysis by an arborist would determine that it's feasible to do that. Otherwise it would be mitigated through the standard process with additional trees. We did, we're showing some options for implementation within the LID program, such as within the green space, such as a pollinator garden. There's an area that can be set aside for some type of structure, whether it's a fountain, sculpture, something like that, some kind of point of interest within the green space to kind of create a pocket park type idea. This kind of zooms in on some of the items that we're looking at for that can be implemented to meet LID requirements and actually exceed those, such as if it requires irrigation, utilizing underground detention system to collect that as rainwater and then use it for irrigation, taking the normal storm inlet design and then adding some additional filtration to protect the stormwater runoff, EV charging stations, like we discussed, solar power street lamps, those types of things would be options that could be considered in the full design. Next steps with this project would be to kind of begin the design phase and actually, determine a project budget, develop the construction plans, begin the permitting process with both the town, SCDHEC, and SCDOT. Incidentally, we did coordinate with SCDOT during this because there are a couple of requirements that are going to be difficult to achieve because of the size of the project. They were very happy to accommodate us since we were basically looking at removing these ingress egress points from Coleman Boulevard and put them on the side streets. So, and with that, I'll take any questions you have and back up and take a look at anything in more detail.
Mr. Charlie?
I have two questions. Number one, when will DRB get a chance to look at this?
If the committee says that this is the option that we would like to go, we'll start that process immediately.
Okay. And then also, Mayor, as you know, we have a new commission for external projects like this called the Green Commission. Mm-hmm. And I would think they would need to take a look at it, too.
Yeah.
So, thank you.
I think it would be a good thing that we have the first meeting in June, the Green Commission. I know I would be much more comfortable if we're relocating a tree. I didn't vote to spend taxpayer money on our signature boulevard to be doing the proverbial cliche paved paradise putting up a parking lot.
Right.
So if we can relocate that tree, to me, it's a totally different alternative than if we're just, even if we're mitigating, because I mean, that's a very familiar part of town. And I don't think the citizens are going to react kindly if we use tax money to gain seven parking spaces to take down, to eliminate a big tree. Moving it, can we find out if that's feasible before we do a final vote on this?
We have looked into that, Mayor. It is feasible to move the tree based upon initial review from the arborist, a gentleman actually Kevin has dealt with before. So moving it elsewhere on this, moving it on the site, we've actually indicated up near the road in that green space area that's created when we remove all that pavement. So that would be the proposal.
Yes, and there are actually two trees that we're proposing to relocate right now, eliminating none.
Okay. Yeah, I was speaking of the oak tree. I think the other's
a magnolia. Magnolia, that's right.
And it's the oak tree that's closest to the corner of Simmons and Coleman, or what?
It is, yes, kind of in the middle third of on the Simmons Street side.
Okay. Because
it is...
Yeah,
it's right in the middle of the seven boat parking spots.
Okay.
Mayor.
Yes.
Can I make a motion?
You certainly may.
I'd like to move that we have the Green Commission take a look at this and then bring back recommendations.
Okay.
In July, I guess, right? Because they're meeting next month. When are they meeting for the first time?
The end of June. End of this month.
End of June. So we'll...
So it's possible that we could have something from them at our July meeting. Mm-hmm. That would be the goal. I know it's a new commission. It's their first meeting. They got to elect officers and all that. But, I mean, that's what they're there for.
Yeah.
All right. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a second. Any discussion? All right. All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. The motion passes. So that's where we will go with that.
Thank you very much.
Item 8 is update on ongoing projects.
Mayor, we have a little bit more on item number 7 that we have in the presentation. It was the
the grade separated pedestrian facility.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Very quick, and I sent a memo on this issue last week just because there's a lot more context to the design than what you're going to see Brad clipping and putting something in the presentation, so I wanted you to have that. But a part of the discussion when we started looking at this location was the obvious high amount of pedestrian traffic we have and whether that could be improved. And there's only so much you can do at grade, and that's with the existing signal crossings, and we know how that can affect traffic, and it's less safe in that manner. So we did look at what a elevated pedestrian structure could look like here. We had Leolio Architecture perform that analysis for it, and you know, these are just concepts. They're very high-level concepts. We haven't costed this out. It's just for an understanding of really how it could look, how it could fit within the environment. And I guess I'm got my button pushed there. Let's go back. So these were the objectives that we laid out for Leolio, and that was we obviously have a public space that we're working on at 516 Coleman. We have public space. Kitty corner from the other side, catty corner, I don't know what you want to call it. Some people say kitty, some people say catty. So these are really just concepts both in form and orientation, and nothing more than that to get an idea.
Got it.
And they did use, I keep hitting that, they did use look to aquatics and the natural environment for inspiration. That's why they're architects, and I'm an engineer, because I could never envision something like this, but you can see something as a redfish tail, and you can actually see that in the design, how it moves over the intersection. It's a cable stayed structure, so you can kind of see display of the tail, etc. So these are just some images. That's one orientation, but it does touch down in the corners on the opposite side, one in the 516 and one at the farmer's market. This is a concept that uses the curvature of a seahorse. And it's on one side.
I was going to say the Kraken, but seahorse is better. Yeah.
I said Guggenheim when I saw it the first time, and but you know, to each his own. Once again, orientation. This is making an assumption about the openness of existing sites. This could easily be moved to the other side as far as orientation goes. Also, this is called the shrimp.
That's interesting.
So you can. I suppose that, you know, you can see the cladding of a shrimp in that image and how it comes across the intersection. So those are the concepts, once again, just to really see how they fit in the environment. And it was just a part of our conversation. We don't have cost information at this point in time. I could give you an idea that a typical, very limited structure is probably in the $3 to $5 million range for anything like that. So obviously, it becomes more expensive when you start considering something like this. So, just wanted to give that to you as information.
Thank you. What are y'all's initial responses? Can you go back?
Yes, sir.
Go back to the cable stable. And then we've got our farmer's market right there. That's got the old low country tin roof look to it. This strikes me as something that would be a little more compatible with all of that. But I need to think about it.
Certainly understood. I mean,
creative designs sometimes don't hit you, especially during a committee meeting. You got to look at them a little more closely. But
You saw some of the designs, some of the European designs and the things in that other, they're much more contemporary than this. But certainly there's aspects of the vernacular around here that can be added to any of these structures. Wood, for one thing, we have Shin Creek right down with the bridge and things like that.
I do like sticking with the nautical, marine nautical type theme. Do you need us to do anything at this point?
No, sir.
Okay. So if nobody's
has information.
Opinion this year.
I don't like it.
Yes, we can.
Okay. Yeah, we couldn't make a crab work.
Thank you.
All right. So we'll move on, and Ms. Corley needs to go. Can we go to the, what was it, Faison Road thing first? Commonwealth. I'm sorry, Commonwealth. That's the first update we're going to do. Got it. So I'll get right into it. This is an update requested last month after our initial meeting. There was a couple of questions the committee asked. One was regarding the ability of public services to construct that sidewalk. The answer is yes, but the answer really is that's not how we're built. And we typically would contract this out. If they had to do it, it would probably take away resources from their typical work crews. So that's not something we would desire to do. We think the best option there would be, if we're going to build a sidewalk, to contract through our normal services. You asked for an opinion of cost. We have that as $417,000. That includes design and permitting. It doesn't include any wetlands impacts that we may have. I don't know that there are anything there, but that's just a caveat. The initial cost is about $12,500. Mayor, you requested information on Meadowrush Parkway, which is similar and different at the same time, but nonetheless, it's people using that cross-section of the pavement. And that is a designated bike lane on Meadowrush Parkway. It's 5 feet wide. People run and walk in it as well as bike. And postage fee.
$4,743 average.
Yes, sir. About 4,700 on the ADT, 30 mile per hour posted, 85th percentile speed is 37 miles per hour. And we had that same information for Deer Creek Trail last month. We are reviewing the operation, the current operations of the facility. I got some very specific feedback from Mr. Peel, which I think was a good thing. We talked about last week on how we can improve the transition at the intersection, that this is just the standard design, and now that we're seeing some interaction of all three users, the vehicles, bikes, and pets, I think there's probably a little bit better design, probably more in line with what Mr. Chat was suggesting, where we can pull that facility off at the intersection by adding pavement to the intersection, delineating it with more markings, and then transition it into the crosswalk. So there's some other ideas that we're considering that we could do. We could also double up the thermoplastic width and make it tactile. It has little bumps in it. So you've seen this on rural roads. When you get too close to the edge, you'll hear that. You can do that also. So there's some other things we're looking at to enhance the current design. So I just wanted to bring you up to date on that.
Okay.
So what you're saying is, I'm sorry.
No, yeah. Please,
That it's going to cost almost $500,000 to put down a sidewalk on that space.
Yes, mainly because you have to pipe the ditch.
And there's already a wait list, right, for sidewalks and et cetera. So,
yes, ma'am. We have a prioritized list of sidewalks.
And so have we gotten on that list? Or not we, but has Commonwealth?
Yes, ma'am. That road has been on the list. It's in the lower third on the list because of cost benefit. It's something we talked about last time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's currently on the low end.
So estimating how long before do you think we can make that happen?
I don't know that I could right now. I'd have to probably go back. I can, it'd be years. Many years.
5 years?
Yes, ma'am.
For reference, we part of the CMP, the Capital Maintenance Program, for new sidewalks, we receive $500,000 a year currently budgeted. So essentially one for one project.
So $500,000 for the year on sidewalks. And this would cost $500,000 basically.
And if I can ask, that's for a whole sidewalk. And you're talking about the drainage pipe and all that. But the other enhancements that you were just talking about, that's a whole separate ballgame, right? So you could proceed with the other enhancements right now?
Yes, sir. We're already looking at how that transition area up there is adding pavement, and or it could actually be a separated sidewalk. We'd probably have to pipe that, but we're going to look at the cost benefit on that. That's only for 80 to 100 feet.
Okay.
And the rest of it is markings.
Okay.
And you know, through either conversations and observations, we see something else regarding signage or any other aspect, we'll certainly consider it. That's
it's kind of why I guess we chose this as a pilot project. We could also learn from it.
I think it was interesting that during public comments, people were talking about the IOP project, and you know, they were talking about walk against traffic and ride with traffic, and we're asking people to walk with traffic. And people aren't doing it. You know, there's, if you're walking, people are still going on the opposite side, and then people are biking with the traffic. So I think this is just, yeah, can we just keep talking about this and thinking about this and how we can better this? And then also, Mr. Chapman, I know that you came out and walked the path and looked at it, and you had maybe mentioned that since we are already paving some, we have that big paving project that we approved today during bids and purchases, maybe paving over that road and then adding 2 feet to the walkway, and then maybe just drawing a line where the pavement stops right now. Does that make sense? So adding 2 feet of asphalt and then drawing a line where the asphalt currently stops, basically just giving, scooting it over 2 feet, right? That's what I
meant. You just take the drawing or the picture, bottom left.
Yes.
You pave over where the markings are now.
Right.
You add 2 feet additional to the edge. Put a edge line where the existing pavement is. You'll have 2 extra feet for doing something. DOT does that all over the state. So it isn't cheap, but it's a lot cheaper than $417,000.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Can we look at that?
Yes, ma'am.
Just to
see. This was recently, this was a micro surfacing, so it was recently repaved when we did this. So what you're talking about is not having any dedicated pedestrian pathing in the sidewalk, in the pavement section, and adding essentially a 2 foot safety shoulder?
Yes, with an edge line, and you don't have to pave the whole road, just pave where the markings are now over, so you don't have to worry about
it. You'd either eradicate them or micro them again.
Exactly.
Okay. Yes, sir, I think I understand.
Does that give something to work, Ms. McCoy?
I think it does, yes.
Something to look at right now?
Thank you.
And I know if you need to learn.
I do.
Go ahead.
Wait, are we going to talk about the sewage stuff? The draining stuff? No.
I just provided that as an email update. I'd be happy to talk about that quickly. We did find some, if you have time. Kevin's been out there 2 or 3 times and had some initial investigation that we've actually found some pretty obvious culprits of some of the flooding and blocked pipes, blocked inlets, as well as just debris in some of the major conveyance features. So we've already placed work orders to correct some of that. He will continue, as he promised, to look at the design side of things, the hydrology. I can tell you that he told me that the roadway elevations of, I think, one of the roads, Woodspring, is about the lowest road elevation he's seen in the town. So that tells you something about that surrounding area. It's very low. So from a hydrology standpoint, there's only so much we'll be able to consider and redesign. But there are opportunities that he has found. So I think there's some possibilities there. And certainly talking with the neighborhood representation, we're getting a better understanding of some of the possibilities. So I think it's very positive so far.
Thank you.
Any more on the ongoing projects that do you have anything? Cut you short if y'all got something you prepared. So
I'll go through a couple. One, just to talk about another sidewalk project ongoing right now, should be wrapping up this next week, is the Bessemer sidewalk. So that's underway right now. Again, about $230,000 for 2,300 linear feet of sidewalk and a new RRFB crossing there at the daycare. So that one should be wrapping up here shortly. We'll run through just a couple of these here. Pictures Point Gateway is on track schedule-wise.
Dominion has relocated their utilities out of the way, so you'll start to see a lot more work going on out there. Bonnet Key Parkway, Pace Course is coming in this month, so you'll really start to see that road tape shape. If you haven't been over there, there's curb and gutter. It's everything but paved up to this point. The multi-use path is in place.
Are we still on track for what, October?
October.
Okay.
Yes, sir. Place Wales is still going through that NEPA process right-of-way acquisition right now, so that should be taking off here soon. With the Army Corps review, and Maritime is under construction right now, doing some drainage work on the Wander Park Boulevard approach. The sidewalk, the previous sidewalk, is in place. Going into the neighborhood, here's some of that HP pipe. It's one of our pilot project locations, as opposed to RCP, reinforced concrete pipe, so very excited about that. All American Boulevard, again, going through some final right-of-way acquisition and condemnation, and looking to bid this project here this summer. And that's it.
And we got a thank you on the sidewalk for the Maritime.
Really?
It's for Hopcock Creek.
Good. Good job. And thank you all for the updates and the information. If there's nothing else, this committee is adjourned.
Thank you, Mayor.
Hey, Brad. How you doing? So you don't need me up here. I'm just here. You know,
good to see you.
Thanks for your presence.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it. You get on the ground.
That's fine.
That's fine. Good job. Thanks for your time.
Hey, y'all. How you doing?
Brent?
Appreciate it.
You coming down?
Yeah. We'll touch base.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I wouldn't anticipate that. I guess I haven't thought about it.
Carry from the tape and set the car on.
So I don't know what that means as far as schedules. Absolutely.
It's not going to put a bunch of time on the effort right
now. No, just kind of you let me know what you need and do it another way. Treble.
Okay. Sounds good. All right. Safe travels back.
Thank you.
graphic.